And it is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5. The Game, online at thegamenashville.com, live from SEC Media Days, where our coverage is presented by Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and our transportation provided by Walker Chevrolet. Phil Savage, the color analyst of the Alabama Crimson Tide and the director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, is going to join us in about 10 minutes, Floyd. Bill Hancock of the College Football Playoff is going to join us in a little bit. So a loaded hour right here. Plus, at 5 o'clock, we're going to get into this big topic about something Kirby Smart said today. We got so much on the docket. That being said, as far as Kirby Smart and Georgia are concerned, are you surprised at how few people are ready to jump into the water on Georgia? You know, people are saying, well, I'm going to take Georgia to win the East, kind of. And they feel like the favorite in the East, but not like Tennessee was the favorite last year. They almost feel like the favorite by default. And Georgia went today, and I still am just kind of not totally all in and sold on Georgia. And no one here is trying to sell me on Georgia either, which I find to be kind of surprising.
Well, here are two things that would sell me. Actually, three things. But one would be they've got the two best running backs in probably college football, which takes pressure off of the young quarterback, even though he may not need it, because I think he's going to be a legit guy. And they have virtually every starter returning on defense. And if you look at the Titans this year, you look at Alabama from years past, you look at a lot of SEC teams, how do they win? They win by running the ball, taking the pressure off the quarterback, and playing great defense. So that would be my formula.
I think a lot of people, though, like maybe this is just me, I'm not sold on Kirby Smart as a coach. Now, there's a lot of coaches in this league I'm not sold on. We obviously know I'm not sold on Butch Jones. I don't think Derek Mason is the greatest coach in the world. You know, I don't even know anything about the coach at Missouri, Odom. I don't, you know.
I mean, you're sold on Nick. Okay. That took brain power.
Yeah.
Everybody's sold on Nick.
I asked you the question the other day when we were sitting there. I go, who's the worst coach in the SEC? The worst coach. And it was, I don't know.
I don't know either.
And then I think, okay, who's the second best coach in the SEC? You know, the initial thing would be, well, Gus Malzahn played for a national title. He's the only other coach to do that. But Gus Malzahn, you know, is, you know, last year almost got fired. So it's probably not Gus Malzahn. So if it's not Gus Malzahn, who's the second best coach in the SEC?
Well,
Braden Gall will tell you it's Dan Mullen at Mississippi State. I'm not sure I believe that. Yeah. That's what he says.
I mean, I think you look at the coaches in the SEC, and the coaches are not all that different than the young quarterbacks, because you're looking at coaches that are new in new spots, and Kirby's a great, great example. You know, Kirby's taken over a big-time program, and Georgia is, you know, one of the handful of programs probably in the SEC that is very Alabama-like, if you will, from the standpoint that whatever they need, whatever it costs, they'll get it. And so I think they're expected to play as LSU, you know, on the Alabama plane. And I think that's why I think Kirby is a really bright young coach. I think he's going to – I think it's – similar to what Derek said today. Derek said, you know what? Until you sit in this head coach's chair, you have no idea what it means to be a head coach. And I think a lot of people need to understand that. And the hard part about the SEC is they'll understand that for maybe a season, maybe half a season. Well, and then they're all past that.
Well, it was like a lot of the things Gary Danielson was talking about on our show earlier, about when Kevin Sumlin and Texas A&M beat Alabama, it was like the league then believed that there was a shortcut on how to beat Alabama. That, okay, if we play this wild and crazy spread offense, we can beat Alabama. And the only team to really do that since was Ohio State with Cardale Jones and all those great players, Ezekiel Elliott, Joey Bosa, etc. and Deshaun Watson. Well, nobody in this league has Deshaun Watson. I'm just going to – look, we know that there's a lot of young quarterbacks out there. Nobody in this league has Deshaun Watson. So it's like that is almost watered down the coaching a little bit. It's, to a certain extent, kind of, I don't say ruined the coaching, but I would feel like if Mark Richt was in this league, we may say he's the second best coach in the league.
But he was in this league.
And he's not anymore. He got fired.
And he got
and
fired.
And they replaced him with Kirby, and here we are a year later saying, well, do we think Kirby's there better than Mark
go.
Richt? Well, I don't
that's,
know.
You'd look at, they got rid of Mark. You look at Les Miles leaving with 80% win. You know, I mean, that's the SEC. That's where we are. And if you're among those programs that demand that you play for a national championship on a yearly basis, not an SEC East championship, not an SEC championship, they're talking about national championship, then you know what? That's what's going to happen. And I think when they take those jobs, they know that. You know, they're taking the job, but they're willing, and this is what they're saying. They're saying the only teams that are going to be able to compete with Alabama are the teams that are going to do what Alabama does. And this school will do that because we know there's a whole handful of them out there that won't do it.
Phil Savage, who, by the way, is the color analyst for Alabama, also the director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, he's going to join us next. It's Jared and the GM. We're live out at SEC Media Days. Hey, it's the 11th annual Cumberland River Dragon Boat Festival benefiting the Cumberland River Compact. It comes back to Nashville Saturday, September 9th. Find 20 people to participate in Nashville's most fun outdoor event. Teams from all over Nashville compete in a 250-meter race for the title of Grand Champion. Limited number spots are available. Register now at CumberlandRiverCompact.org. Jared and the GM live from SEC Media Days on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the show, live out at SEC Media Days. Nick Saban tomorrow will join the show. Floyd, I'm very impressed that Nick Saban would want to come on with Jared and the GM.
I'm excited. I haven't seen Nicky in a while, so it'll be good to see how he's doing. He's lucky enough, or we're lucky enough, that he's making his plane wait to take him to the lake so that he can visit with us.
How do you know that?
I got my methods. I figure I got it. I know.
Did you talk to Nick directly in order to get this interview set up?
We got it set up. That's all that matters.
Well,
right.
I know Nick wants to come on with Jared and the GM. I don't know of whom on Jared and the GM Nick wants to come on with, but we will have both Kentucky coach Mark Stoops and Alabama coach Nick Saban on the show tomorrow. And my guess is with Mark Stoops, I think if we were to ask, okay, Jared and the GM each set up one interview with a coach tomorrow, who set up Mark Stoops and who set up Nick Saban? I think the people at home would be able to figure that out. Speaking of Nick Saban, we're awaiting Phil Savage, the director of the Reese's Senior Bowl, who's also the color analyst for the for the Crimson Tide. He used to be the general manager of the Cleveland Browns and so on and so forth. We asked Gary Danielson earlier today about whether or not Alabama was bad for the league, and Gary said no, because Gary's take was that the league needs the dominant team to be really good. You need the Yankees to be good. You need the, you know, in the NBA, you need LeBron. You need those type of teams, and clearly Saban and Alabama are that. But has it at least taken some of the excitement out of what we're doing right now here at SEC Media Days talking SEC football, because Alabama has been so hands-down dominant for the last decade of college football?
That would be interesting, and I don't know the answer to that. This is what I would expect. I mean, if it's a 10, if the excitement is a 10, and for Alabama it would be a 15, and for the rest of the league it would be a 5. Now, does that end up a 10? I don't know. But I think the excitement is so much bigger for Alabama and so much bigger for Nick. And so, I mean, it's just monstrous. Now, given that, is it the same for, Tennessee as it has been in the past? Is it the same for Kentucky as it has been in the past? I don't know. I don't know that. So, you know, the answer is probably pretty complicated. And there are those that believe, and we're going to get it. We'll see a great picture of it this year. In the SEC West, we know what's going to happen, or we feel certain what's going to happen. In the SEC East, in my mind, it's going to be a gunfight. And so, you know, we'll see what people want to watch.
And then when we get to the championship game, do you give anybody a shot to beat Alabama? Because
no.
This time last year, I looked at Alabama and I looked at everything they had to replace. Because remember where Alabama was this time last year. Jacob Coker, their starting quarterback, gone. Derrick Henry, their Heisman Trophy winning running back, gone. All of these great players, Reggie Ragland, their All-American linebacker, gone. Just a lot of really good players they had to replace. This year, Alabama's got guys they'll have to replace. They always have guys they have to replace. I'm not worried about how Alabama's going to replace any of these guys. I'm just going to operate under the assumption that they are going to replace them because that's what Alabama does. And it's become such a factory that it almost, last year you could have at least talked your way into, you know, maybe Alabama won't have as great of a season as they had the years before. I can't do that right now. To me, I think Alabama will run through the SEC. My only question with Alabama, and we'll get into this tomorrow with Nick, about how does he feel about the fact that he's going to start the year off with maybe the toughest game of the season in Florida State. That's the question. Can you beat Florida State, who by all recruiting ranking counts and everything is going to theoretically on paper have as much talent in week one as Alabama does? Now, if I had to pick right now where we sit, I think it would be a close game. I would take Alabama maybe by a whisker. But that's the one game is that Florida State game that starts the season, and then after that, I think Alabama's going to run the table because they just seem to do it better than everybody else.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, I think they do things across the board better than everybody else. They recruit better. They coach better. They understand game day and what to do on game day better. So it'll be exciting.
And somebody who knows firsthand about Alabama knowing how to do things, it seems to be a little bit better, is Phil Savage. He joins us now, the color analyst of the Crimson Tide Radio Network, plus the director of the Reese's Senior Bowl. And, Phil, we were just kind of talking about Alabama's dominance. We have sat here, you know, and in Nashville where you've got Tennessee and Vandy, you know, we've talked a lot about the SEC East because we kind of look at the West as somewhat of a foregone conclusion, and that just speaks to what Alabama's been able to accomplish. You've witnessed it firsthand. How is it that way where one guy goes out, somebody comes in? Derrick Henry out, in comes Damian Harris at running back or Bo Scarborough, et cetera.
Well, I think it starts at the top. There's only one Nick Saban in this league, and he's the one who sets the table as the leader in terms of their recruiting and evaluations within recruiting, then their development of the players once they get there, because most of these players do get an incubation time before they hit the field. And then thirdly is the execution on game day and the adjustments on game day. And I've always felt like that Nick Saban and his coaching staff were always a step ahead of the curve. They brought some NFL elements to college football that sometimes can be overwhelming to the opponent. But it's been amazing to watch. Of course, they've won three titles in a row. They're going for a fourth. There was a stretch in 17 years where there was never a back-to-back SEC champion, and now Alabama is looking to try to make it a quad-peat, I guess is what you'd call that.
It's interesting, and this is kind of going in a little bit of a different direction, but I'm curious. You've been running the Reese's Senior Bowl for the last X number of years and have done a great job, by the way.
Thank you. Given that,
what is the position of postseason bowls in the college world anymore?
I would say with our game and in the event down in Mobile, Floyd, this is the contrast and the change. 1964, Joe Namath is the first pick in the draft in December of 64. He played in the Reese's Senior Bowl in January of 65. He had already been picked, and he played in a college all-star game. Now you're talking about guys that fifth, sixth, seventh rounders at times say, well, you know, my elbow's bothering me, my knee sprain coming off, I'm not quite ready to go, so I'm going to bypass it. We're probably somewhere in between. I do think that from a local standpoint and probably within the state of Alabama, we sell ourselves as a college all-star game because in this part of the country, people want to see the Bama helmet, the Auburn helmet, LSU, Ole Miss, what have you. Nationally, we try to sell ourselves as more of a pre-draft event. And in doing that, for the player, for the prospect, two things. He can make a lasting impression on the field. We've seen player after player in the practices. This year, Hassan Reddick from Temple. Mm-hmm. It's probably a third-round pick during the season. That's what people were saying about him. By the end of the second practice, people were saying he's probably a first-rounder. He goes 13th overall because of what he showed in those practices. So a lasting impression on the field and then that first impression off the field. As you know, when you go to Penn State or Michigan or Florida State, you don't get to talk to the players. Right. You're just evaluating their film and talking to the staff and the coaches. And at the Reese's Senior Bowl, it's that opportunity to make that connection, really find out what the kid's personality is about. And that can set the narrative for that prospect going into the combine, the pro days, and on into the draft. So this year, obviously, before juniors could declare, the first round was dominated by seniors. A lot of them played in the Senior Bowl. Nowadays, we don't get as many first rounders. This past year we had four, but from the second through the fifth round, which is the guts of your draft, 45% of all the players picked were in Mobile. So it still is a very important comparison evaluation tool.
Tell us about, you just finished a book. I understand. Give us a little rundown on your book.
Yeah, Floyd, it's called Fourth and Goal Every Day. It comes out August 29th, and it's a story that's told from the perspective of a young kid that grew up in the state of Alabama when Coach Paul Bear Bryant, Alabama, dominated the scene in the 1970s. I mean, when I was a kid here, Bama was in it every year. And so he cast such a larger-than-life shadow over everybody. And so that perspective and then being part of Bill Belichick and Nick Saban's staff in Cleveland, 91-95, we had one winning season in 5 years. I think we ended up with six head coaches and six general managers off that staff. The reason I tell that story is because part of the reason I wanted to write the book was to try to help people understand how difficult it is to win. And so being the color analyst at Alabama the last 8 years and watching a lot of the philosophy, a lot of what Bill Belichick and the staff was trying to put together, to see it come to life in New England with five titles, to see what Nick Saban and his staff have accomplished over the last decade in Alabama, I just felt like I could bring a unique perspective through that childhood experience to my first few years in the NFL to now being the color guy. I think people will be fascinated by the read. It's certainly not a tell-all. It's not Nick Saban's autobiography. It does not preclude him from writing a book of his own or five or six bestsellers. But I did think, being a native Alabamian and someone that has been connected to the program really since 1987, that it was something that I should do.
You and I have been very fortunate in that we've worked with Bill and Nick, who I think are the two. Nick's the best college coach ever, and Bill's the best pro coach ever. That's me. What in your mind, when you look at those two guys, do you see as a couple of similarities and maybe a couple of differences?
Well, I'd love to hear your answer to this one. But me too. I think, first of all, intelligence. They can talk football without even going to the board in terms of zone blitzes, we're going to do this, we're going to choke that, whatever the situation is. So the attention to detail in terms of being able to adjust on the fly and having an answer when things don't go right. And then I think the third thing is just the enduring work ethic, the devotion to the craft of being a coach. I've often said that with Bill, to me, you could drop him out in the middle of North Dakota at a high school, and he could coach all 22 positions and the specialists. and do it as well as anybody in the country.
Oh, yeah.
And with Nick Saban, Rick Venturi's quoted in the book as saying, I think he's the best defensive back coach to ever walk the face of the planet.
Wow.
That is the respect level that Coach Venturi has for Nick. And so I think those are similarities. I think differences, you know, you see Bill he's going to wear whatever he wants. He's not trying to impress anybody. He's not really having to sell a program because, as you know, in professional football, it's 90% evaluation and 10% recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
In college football, this is probably an exaggeration, but it's 10% evaluation, 90% recruiting. So Nick Saban is going to be buttoned up. He's going to be dressed to the nines. He's going to present himself in a first-class way because he's having to be the face of his program in a public setting. So that's a difference. I think they both have a subtle sense of humor. You know, Bill's a little bit more of a sarcastic way of doing it. Nick will jab you here and there along the way. You know how that goes. But I think, again, you said it, and I would agree. Greatest pro coach, greatest college coach. And I tell the story in the book. When I went to Cleveland 1991, March 18th, Bill comes in and says, I'm the new kid on the block. I'd been interviewed by Gary Tranquil and the offensive coaches. So he walks in, introduces himself, says, look, we're short one coach on defense, and I know we hired you for offense, but let me walk you down to the defensive coordinator and meet Nick Saban. Well, I didn't know if it was Lou Saban's nephew or, you know, the old coach of the Bills or who Nick Saban was. And so literally within 5 minutes, and you would never have known it at that moment in time, that you just met two of the greatest coaches, certainly in this generation.
Oh, yeah.
Phil Savage is our guest. Phil, we really appreciate you stopping by. And once again, we are going to get the book.
Good deal. I appreciate it. Again, it's August the 29th, so almost right before the season starts. And people can order it now online, pre-order it. You save about $9, so it's not a bad way to go.
That's how Floyd Reese likes to shop.
There you go.
Phil, we really appreciate it.
Good
Thanks
deal,
for
guys. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks, Phil Savage.
Right here, a loaded day here out at SEC Media Days because, once again, our coverage presented by Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and our transportation provided by Walker Chevrolet. And speaking of Walker Chevrolet, they are on Carruthers in Franklin. That's a lot of good stuff on Belichick and Saban.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Hancock, the executive director of the College Football Playoff, will stop by the desk next. As once again, we are loaded at SEC Media Days. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Live out at SEC Media Days, it's Jared and the GM. Mark coverage presented by Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and transportation provided by Walker Chevrolet. Floyd, the College Football Playoff, I think you can say, has been a home run.
Has for me. Tell you that.
And the man who is the executive director of the College Football Playoff, Bill Hancock, is with us here at the desk here at SEC Media Days. So let me start with this. Even though I think it's a home run, and Floyd seems to think it's a home run, every time after you finally do something a couple times, you can learn the ins and outs and the nooks and the crannies. And so what do you make of the College Football Playoff now that we've had it for a couple of years, and where can it be better going forward?
Well, it's good to be on, guys. Thank you for having me. And if it hasn't been a home run, it's a triple into the gap. And the third base coach had to stop the guy from going home. So that's what I think. It's been remarkably successful. We had high expectations going in, but it was an unknown. When I'm here 3 years ago, we're talking about it. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how the public's going to react to the selection committee. We don't know how the selection committee is going to operate. But we got into it and discovered that it all works. We tweak it during the offseason. We look at it and see what needs to be tweaked. Might be a better way to say that. Committee-wise, we decided not to make any changes. We're doing a few little things for the teams as far as on the game preparation side, but it's been remarkably successful. And our motto is, "Don't fix it if it ain't broke."
It's funny because I always look at how, you know, the last couple weeks of the season, and everybody's got an opinion on, well, this team's strength of schedule is better than that team's conference championship, or that team's conference championship should matter more than their out-of-conference big win on the road, et cetera. And I almost feel like it's like politics, right? You've got philosophical differences. You know, if you think that this matters more, then it doesn't. for the college football playoff, is there a way to streamline the opinions of the committee so that we kind of know how they feel, or is this the reality of dealing with a subjective committee?
This is the reality of what I tend to call more art than science. These are 12 people making subjective opinions based on what they saw from reviewing the tape, based on looking at the data that they have, and we have reams of data. It's a nerd's paradise, all the data that we provide to the committee. And then it's a result of their conversations. And I wouldn't have it any other way. We had the objective statistical computer rankings with the BCS, and we knew that wasn't the best way. We figured that out over time. And this human committee, with its subjectivity, with its ability to look at the nuances, is the way to go.
Let me, and this is, if I have a concern, this would be my concern. And I'm not sure how big a concern it is, to be honest. But the criteria on a year-to-year basis. And it's not that the criteria changes, in my mind. I think the basics that you're using to determine the hierarchy, I think, is solid, and I think you're sold on that. Are there perhaps more influence giving to different areas on a year-to-year basis?
I know what you're asking, Floyd, and it's a good question. The thing is, the people change, committee members change, so that this committee, chemistry-wise, will be different than last year's committee. So if you say, well, why is it changing? It's because the people change, and also the circumstances change. They're like snowflakes. Every season is different. We were faced with a unique situation this year with the Big Ten, with Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State all having defeated each other in all kind of different screwy kind of games. Remember the kicking game that was such a factor in Penn State, Ohio State. Michigan thumped Penn State, and then we had the colossal, fantastic matchup between Ohio State and Michigan. So all those circumstances are going to be different every year, and viewed differently by the committee. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the fact that we have this system based on art and subjective opinions of experts who can sit around and debate it, it has been great for our game. I wouldn't change it.
So, and when I hear that, then I think you change two people, whoever they may be, and you bring in two strong personalities. I don't know who that would be, but two strong personalities. There might be such a thing that they could really influence the criteria.
Yeah, I hear that, and people say that to me a lot, but in the room, you would know that there's not a strong dominating personality in the room. These are professional people. Mm-hmm. They are not bullies and lecturers. They are listeners. They are facilitators. But they give their opinion. And I'll tell you, interestingly, we lose two top members this year, two really quality people, Condoleezza Rice and Barry Alvarez. Their terms expired. Mm-hmm. We're bringing in three new people. Chris Howard. Chris played at Air Force, was a Rhodes Scholar, had a distinguished service career. He's now the president of Robert Morris University. Gene Smith played at Notre Dame, AD at Ohio State. And Frank Beamer, a retired coach from Virginia Tech. So you can see we lose Condi and Barry. We replace them with three different people, different perspectives, but they're going to fit right in just fine. And neither Condi nor Barry dominated the room by any means. And I don't expect Chris and Gene and Frank to either, but they're going to give us different perspectives, which is good.
Bill Hancock's the executive director of the College Football Playoff. He's our guest. What do you make now that you've got kind of two New Year's Eves and a New Year's Day about where you want these games to be played? What is best for the bowls? What is best for the playoff? What is best for TV? And what is best for the fans?
First of all, the championship game, our flag is planted on that Monday night, the Monday night after the NFL ends.
And I think we're all fans of that Monday night game.
No doubt about that. No debating that. On the New Year's Eve matter for the semifinals, we tried to do something special on New Year's Eve. After the first year, we looked at it. It didn't work. Joe Fan really would rather go off to New Year's Eve party. And he or she was probably watching games at his New Year's Eve party, but it wasn't the same as watching from home.
You should be applauded, though. You were at least smart enough to know that.
We figured it out. And we were smart enough, and we were flexible enough to say, guys, it doesn't work. Let's go back to the drawing board. Yeah. So the games will be on either semifinal games will either be on a Saturday or a national holiday. There's one year we're playing on Friday, New Year's Eve, but it's the national holiday for that period. So I don't know, that's 2022 or something. Mm-hmm. But so again, I'm very proud of our board for allowing us to and making it happen where we made the change away from New Year's Eve. We tried it. Good for us. We tried it. Better for us. We figured out it didn't work. And we made a change.
I'm sure you get the expansion question every time you sit down, and to be honest with you, I wouldn't be in favor of it, and I assume you're not, or else you'd be doing something about it. Is it somewhere in the back of your mind? Does it exist in your world?
It doesn't, from two perspectives. One is we have a 12-year contract for the four-team tournament, and it would require the unanimous consent of all the conferences to change it.
Well, you can't get unanimous consent on anything.
And not in America, not these days. The other thing is I personally believe that four is the number. Four, it's a win-win. Four gave the fans the playoff that they wanted, but four lets us keep the regular season so compelling. We have the most meaningful regular season in sports. And NFL fans might say, wait a minute, we got a great regular season. They do. But, man, oh, man, if you lose in college football regular season, you're not dead, but you about run out of options. You're on thin ice. Yeah.
You know, I think NBA fans would have a good argument, too, about how much their regular season matters. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding about that.
Yeah, I'll tell you what about the playoffs, though. Looking at all the sports, I think the NBA playoffs might be the best way of determining a champion.
We're talking about the playoffs and the offseason. For the NBA, they kill it.
Can you believe the NBA offseason? It's phenomenal.
It's more interesting than the games.
I'm a baseball fan. I'm wanting baseball news, and I'm getting NBA Summer League news. and the free agency news.
Crazy.
See,
crazy.
That's why we need to get Big Baller Brand to be the next sponsor of the college football playoff, and then they'd get all the ratings.
Oh, yeah.
They'd get even more there. Bill Hancock, Bill, we appreciate you stopping by here at SEC Media
Thank
Days.
You
guys are great.
And it really, really was kind of insightful for our listeners, so we appreciate it.
You're great. Thanks. Take care.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
On the hockey. Sorry, it didn't end a little bit better, but what a great run.
No, Look. That was. First thing you said when you sat down with us was that the hockey obviously was just transcended the city of Nashville. So
it's awesome.
Bill Hancock. All right. Joining us here, it's Jared and the GM live from SEC Media Days on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to the show, Jared and the GM, ESPN 102.5 The Game. And here's the thing, we want to give a shout-out. Got to give a shout-out as we're here at SEC Media Days to our sponsors, Pepper Boxing, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, and our transportation provided by Walker Chevrolet. And not just a big thank you for having us out here, but really because this is what the fans want. The coverage that we have had out here for these last 2 days and what we'll have tomorrow has been incredible. And I'm a big fan, Floyd, of checking out the podcast if you miss anything, because our show, you never know what's going to happen. But on this show today, we have had Phil Savage. We have had Bill Hancock of the College Football Playoff. We had an incredible interview with Gary Danielson of CBS earlier today. Peter Burns from the SEC Network. Duke Dawson from Florida. I mean, I'm sure I'm forgetting people. We've had so many people. Yesterday, we had Jordan Rogers with an incredible take on Tennessee, which we'll get to in a second. We had Jay Sean Robertson of Tennessee, Kendall Vickers of Tennessee. We had a huge show then. Tomorrow we'll have Nick Saban and Mark Stoops on the show. And I like Mark Stoops, but I feel like I should just kind of keep him in a separate category because we'll have Nick Saban on Jared and the GM tomorrow. So our coverage has been fantastic. And that was kind of the goal of this show because it was about a year ago, Floyd, that we started this show, a little bit under a year ago, and that was our goal, was to give the people in Nashville the most entertaining, most informative coverage that they can get. And between our three shows that have been here, Braden and Fitz 3D and us, it is not even close.
Well, it's interesting because we've just finished one of the great playoff runs in hockey history, certainly for the city of Nashville. And here it is, you know, a week or 2 weeks later, and we're right in the middle of prime college football country, and we're able to visit with not only some coaches and some people, but we're talking about the biggest and the best.
And it's funny because, you know, who else is this dedicated? And I'm not trying to sit here and talk about how great we are as a station, but sometimes, you know, we need to give ourselves a pat on the back, because think about this. Who else was out in Pittsburgh and St. Louis and Chicago and Anaheim? We were out there. We had live shows from there. Who's been at SEC Media Days? We've been here. We've been the ones giving the coverage. And some people, I guess, just don't see it important enough to come on out to SEC Media Days and give you the coverage that we're giving the people out here. And our coverage is going to continue to get better and better. We've, you know, people now, and a lot of this too, you know, Braden and Fitz coming in into the mix has had a lot to do with this. But people here now at the SEC really, really, they've come up to me and said, man, what you guys are doing in Nashville at 102.5 is incredible. And we appreciate that, and we appreciated everyone that became a fan of ours during the Predators playoff run or during the Titans, because no one is going to own the Titans and own the Predators like we do. And this week, with college football being the big story at SEC Media Days, no one's owned it like we have. And to me, that's why I thank our sponsors, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, Pepper Boxing, and Walker Chevrolet, because they're giving the people that coverage for us to be here. So once again, go visit those fine folks, Volunteer Hose and Gasket, Pepper Boxing, and Walker Chevrolet.
Proud to be associated with them. I mean, it's been a joy.
And it's been a joy to be here and to hear all the different things. And so Jordan Rogers has gotten the people upset. Some UT fans are not happy about Jordan Rogers. This was his take yesterday on our show.
In the relation to the West, the East stinks. In relation to the East, Tennessee is sitting at third or fourth. They're not ahead of Georgia. They're not ahead of Florida. I think right now Kentucky is ahead of them.
Wow.
I absolutely think Kentucky is ahead of
Tennessee. I'm a believer in Kentucky. What do you think? Jordan Rogers saying Kentucky is ahead of Tennessee in 2017.
Well, I think, again, this is what we've talked about earlier, is where – I mean, the truth is, I mean, you think Vandy's ahead of Tennessee. So to think Kentucky's ahead of Tennessee, I don't think is much of a stretch. I'm just curious. I mean, is South Carolina ahead of Tennessee? You know? I mean, where does it stop? And I don't know. I mean, that's I'm asking more than anything else, because I don't know the answer. I mean, we'll know it in a few months. But for right now, when you're trying to pick a winner and, you know, try to somehow select the standings in the SEC East, wow, that's tough duty now.
I think it's a totally valid take to have, and I back Jordan on that. And look, Jordan has a lot of takes I don't agree with. You know, every Jordan Rogers takes in my mind are like a Major League Baseball player. If he's got three good takes out of every 10, he's doing all right. You know, it's like a batting average. And yet I don't know if I agree that Kentucky's ahead of Tennessee, but I think it's a valid take to have, because a lot of people saw that yesterday and they said, oh, he's just a Vandy homer, he's a Bobo, all of that. And I'm sitting here saying, you know what, I understand where Jordan's coming from. And the number one thing I think Jordan's kind of circling is the quarterback position, which obviously makes sense for him to circle that. But we know Kentucky's got a good quarterback in Steven Johnson. We don't know about these two guys for UT.
Well, and it's interesting, because last year, when, in fact, UT did have the quarterback advantage, they didn't take advantage of it. You know, because they really, Dobbs was, I think, probably going away, the best quarterback in the SEC last year. And, you know, UT wasn't able to pull off the big-time championship they wanted. So now they're back starting over, trying to decide who the quarterback's going to be, when all these other schools, Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Georgia, South Carolina, have their quarterbacks in place. and have had them in place for a year, and who knows how much longer. So, you know, now I think the question is which one of those schools is going to take advantage of their quarterback.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. Coming up next here at SEC Media Days, we have been jam-packed with guests today, so we're going to kind of get back to what we normally do, our breakdowns and calls. 615-737-1025, you got to hear what Kirby Smart said earlier today. He clearly takes a shot at Butch Jones.
Wow.
We'll get to that next. Hey, ESPN 1025, The Game wants you to sign up for our $5,000 home improvement contest. Go to thegamenashville.com and register to win $2,500 of furniture and bedding from Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, along with your own spa valued at $2,500 from Four Winds Spas. It's brought to you by Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, your style, your budget. Four Winds Spas, relax, you've earned it. And your friends right here at ESPN 1025 The Game. Don't go anywhere. You've got to hear what Kirby Smart said about Butch Jones. That's next on Jared and the GM, ESPN 1025 The Game.